Elizabeth Elliot says, "If you dwell on your own feelings about things, rather than dwelling on the faithfulness, the love, and the mercy of God, then you're likely to have a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. But dwelling on the faithfulness and the love and the mercy of God is always safe," she says. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of challenge and commitment. Here's your friend, Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking again today about training a child's will. I told you a story yesterday about a child who refuses to use the proper term in speaking to a lady, and his mother quietly withdraws the candy that she was just about to give him at that moment. Well, you may be listening and thinking, well, that's all very well for that child, but my child, he might have waited 24 hours and he would not have changed his mind. Well, let me read you a story along the same lines. A father says to his strong-willed child, "Johnny, shut that door." Johnny says, "I won't." The father says, "You will." Johnny rejoins, "I won't." An issue is here made between two wills, the father's and the son's. Many parents would suppose that in such a case, the child's will ought to be broken, subjugated, forced, if need be, under the pressure of the father's will. And the more conscientious the parent, the firmer is likely to be his conviction of duty. It is at this point that the evil of breaking a child's will instead of training it finds its foothold in many Christian homes. The father makes up his mind not to yield to the child's will. The child has made up his mind not to yield to the father's will. The old conflict between an irresistible force and an immovable object. Now, of course, the father is bigger than the child. He can exert brute force to compel the child to do exactly what he wants him to do, but that's the method of the thumb screws during the Inquisition, compelling a tortured man to deny a belief which he still chooses to adhere to. But in one case, as in the other, the victim of the torturing pressure is permanently harmed, while the cause of truth and right has been in no sense the gainer. What if God should treat you and me that way? He doesn't. He is merciful. He waits. He is patient. He is long-suffering. And he teaches us and draws us and woos us. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in him. And the child needs to learn to trust a loving parent, not one who is going to compel him by brute force to do what the parent wants him to do. Even in the matter of dealing with the lower animals, it has been found that the old idea of breaking the will as a substitute for or as a necessary precedent of the training of the will doesn't work. And the remarkable power of the best horse trainers grows out of the fact that they are trainers and not breakers of horses. One book on dog training is entitled Training Versus Breaking. "Do not fail to abundantly caress him," says the writer, "and speak kindly words. And never, under any circumstances, no matter what the provocation, allow yourself to scold or, in the early stages, to strike him, as this is entirely at variance with our system and is sure to result in the defeat of our plans. Be very gentle with him at all times. Carefully study his disposition and learn all of his ways that you may the more readily understand just how to manage him." Now, I would concur with this because I did have the experience of taking a little Scotty dog, my dear little dog MacPherce, and that's spelled MacPherce, a name that my husband Ad Leach had made up. MacPherce went through obedience school. Now, he was a very stubborn, intractable little dog, and I really was not very sanguine about the possibility of teaching him much of anything. It was amazing to me to see how their very simple, gentle method worked. And the principles by which we taught those dogs in that class, and there were 50 dogs and 50 owners, and you know how distracting other dogs can be to dogs. They had to learn to pay no attention to their neighbors and to listen only to the master's voice. And the method was you speak once, you speak in a normal tone of voice, you speak the dog's name, and it was amazing how even McPhierce passed the course. And it may be fairly recognized as practical and best for a human parent's dealing with his intelligent little ones. And remember, they are intelligent. These are people. These are not just becoming people, but these are human beings with all the potential in them of what they will ever become, and they are made in the image of God. Don't think of them merely as potential people. They have great potentials in them which have not yet been developed, but they are people, and they are made in the image of God. So we parents must remember that we've been given a very great trust in being given these children to raise. So discipline is an important factor in will training, and will training is a very important factor in wise child training. The child must learn to do things that he doesn't want to do when he ought to do them. Do you know some adults that don't do the things they ought to do when they ought to do them? Well, maybe they have a list of excuses for themselves, but probably one of the reasons why they don't do them when they ought to do them is because they never were taught to do things they didn't want to do when they were children. Parents must train children to recognize their duties and their obligations. For example, train them to get up in the morning at the proper hour. Train them to go to bed at a proper time in order to be able to get up in the morning. And you know, this kind of training can begin much earlier than most parents realize. I've spoken before on this program of a very remarkable book called My First 300 Babies. It's a book written by Gladys Hendricks, who was a midwife and would often stay with the family after the baby was born for several weeks in order to help the mother and father teach this child to go to sleep when he should go to sleep and to eat when he should eat. Now, does that seem utterly absurd? Well, you might be convinced if you would read this book, especially by the testimonies of dozens of women whose babies have been trained by the Gladys Hendricks method. And I have been amazed as I've read that book and heard the testimonies of some present-day mothers who have found that it changed their lives. My daughter hadn't received that book until she had number 5. And although she did what I thought was a very good job of teaching the other 4, she said, this book has opened her eyes to possibilities that she never dreamed of before. One young couple that were really quite frantic and exhausted after their first week of the baby's life called me to say that their lives were just changed in 24 hours by the reading of this book, My First 300 Babies. So what Henry Clay Trumbull is saying in his book, Hints on Child Training, a book written 100 years ago, is equally applicable today. And it was the book that I've just mentioned, Hints on Child Training, was written after the father had had 40 years of parental life, 40 years during which he reared 8 children. Teach your children to sleep when they ought to sleep, to eat when they ought to eat, and not to eat when they ought not to eat. You need to think about the quality and quantity of their food, as well as the timing, and make up your minds early as to whether or not you want them to have snacks in between meals. I think snacking is a very bad habit to get into. It should be very closely regulated. And when a child gets into the habit of asking for something to drink anytime he feels like having something to drink, it's very often an evasion of obedience, a way of getting sympathy, a way of distracting his mother from the thing that she knows he should be doing at the time. And as for sweets and cookies, well, I don't think I need to say very much about that. All of you know that sweets and cookies are probably not the best things for children to be having in between meals, and as my mother always said to us, no, it will spoil your lunch, or it will spoil your supper. The child's inclination ought not to be the standard by which we judge. You must study the things that the children ought to do. Make up your mind in advance. You're the one to be in charge, not the child. The president of Yale University many years ago said, in substance, that the chief advantage of the college curriculum is that it trains a young man to do what he ought to do, when he ought to do it, whether he wants to do it or not. Any course of training for a young person that fails to accomplish this much is part of a sadly imperfect system. Well, I wish that were still true in colleges and universities today, but it should be true in your home. Train the child to do what he ought to do, when he ought to do it, whether he wants to do it or not.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.